Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
So Jay and Tim, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this episode here. And I'd like to begin today's episode with a very interesting statistic coming from an OnBe 2022 Future of Payment survey. And it says 32% of individuals are planning on using cash and checks less or not at all in 2022. So Jay, when I make that statement there, I'm curious to kind of get your initial thoughts of, from your perspective, what does that mean? And what do you kind of see then changing within consumer behaviors and also the payments ecosystem?
Absolutely. No, thanks for the question, Ryan. So can you believe it's 2022 and we still have checks that are out there? From a fraud standpoint, there's nothing that says secure like I'm going to have my routing number and account number in the clear on something I'm going to hand to a complete stranger, right? Checks should have been done away with a long time ago, in my opinion. My wife completely disagrees with me. She still loves writing checks. You know, she'll write them wherever that she can. She likes having the pad and paper approach. But I mean, in all honesty, in this day and age, I think the pandemic helped a lot with that. I think we've been clinging way too long on a payment system using checks that is completely outdated and very, very unsecure. And I know that there are security features of checks, and that's great. That's wonderful. But in the day and age of PCI, where we try very hard to protect personal information, again, having something on the clear, written down on a piece of paper you're handing to a stranger is something that should have been done away with. Cash, on the other hand, you'll never get away from cash. There's always going to be, you know, people that are unbanked, that are underbanked, that really need that cash. You know, something needs to be kind of backed on there. To back up a card payment system, to back up a check. So I see that going down mainly because I think people finally have realized, ooh, germs. I was a bank teller. That's how I started my banking career. And you realize just how dirty and filthy money is when that's all that you handle all day long. And afterwards on your break, and you have to continuously wash your hands because somebody maybe walked in that day, made a deposit, and you're just like, I don't know where this money has been, or even worse, I know exactly where this money has been. And you kind of see that going down a little bit. Now, I think people gravitated towards electronic payments because of that during the pandemic. They said, ooh, germs bad. I'm not going to do that. I've seen places all over where I am in, you know, southern Pennsylvania where people were not accepting cash because they didn't have coins because there was a coin shortage, at least in our area. And got more comfortable with electronic payments and realized how easy and fast and secure it is. And I think that's really going to lead to decreased usage of that. And honestly, I think it's the way that we really should be heading.
No doubt about it. So I guess I kind of gravitated towards the paper world early on, but now it's mobile. It's about P2P. It's about being able to use that contactless card. Less about germs for me, but definitely about convenience. Being able to make those transactions quickly, easily, electronically, definitely where I'm at today and going forward. And then you have so many new forms of payment that it's just amazing. Oh, and to your point, no payment vehicle, no payment network ever goes away. They are simply start to get displaced. Volume goes down, but they never go away. Well, except maybe shells.
Isn't that the truth of it? As many new payment methods as we come up with that we have to secure right away, because how many times do we see marketing ahead of security when it comes to locking something down? The older payments are still there. There's still fraud on them. They're still happening. I am still very good friends with a lot of people who still investigate full-time jobs, check fraud. And we forget about that and how easy it is to commit check fraud because, to your point, Tim, they never go away. We just give more options to everybody, including criminals.
I just opened a new bank account. Guess what they gave me as I was walking out the door? Five
starter checks.
Yeah, I think certainly when it comes to check security there, we'd have to call up our friend Frank Abagnale and kind of see what he has to say with that. Certainly a very interesting movie to watch, and kind of gives you a little bit of an insight of the mind of a fraudsters here. But Jay, I'd like to, you know, you kind of mentioned in a lot of this conversation is so far focused on the consumer aspect of it. And we kind of know that, you know, from consumers to businesses, there's certainly kind of, you know, there's a gap sometimes between what consumers adopt and then what businesses adopt. So I'd like to get from your perspective here in the confines of this conversation, is it true that or false if businesses are kind of keeping up with this rapid kind of reconfiguring of their payment preferences types that they have? So consumers, again, like we said, kind of moving more towards the digital realm side of things. Are you seeing kind of the same pace being matched by businesses as it relates to kind of these new digital payment factors?
Well, first, funny that you pointed out Mr. Abagnale, because honestly, when I first started in banking, that was one of the movies that had just come out, and it was highly suggested for all of us to watch. And I actually came this close to getting to see him speak in person. It was canceled at the last minute due to weather, but hoping to one day get to see him speak. To your question, are businesses keeping up? I think for the first time, we were starting to see that in the pandemic. I think businesses have always been just following what the consumers are presenting. And if consumers are presenting cash, then we want cash, whatever to make the consumers happy. And whatever they're going to bring in, I'm going to accept so the way that I can do business. And maybe I'll spend the money to upgrade my facilities, you know, as I start seeing the need, start seeing the demand. I think Apple Pay is a great example of that, right? Apple Pay came out. And I was watching that presentation from Apple and just fist pumping, high five, very excited about this, seeing the security, seeing the benefits. I could not wait till I could provision, you know, the credit card that I had, which happened to participate right away, and get out and use it. And I found, where can I use it? There's nobody accepting contactless yet. Very, very few places. And that adoption was pretty slow. Contactless cards since the pandemic have just gone through the roof. And it was because I think consumers, again, icky, germs, bad, didn't want to touch things. We saw that in our business, you know, as far as financial institutions wanted to adopt that, because not only were businesses starting to finally populate it, financial institutions were very interested because they saw commercials with celebrities starting to advertise it, which drives consumer behavior and interest, which then drives demand to their financial institutions. But I think the pandemic really gave them time to kind of think about how that is really going to affect their business and be on the forefront of it. They don't want their employees to get sick because of it. And this is something I heard talking to a lot of merchants at various forums that I belong to, that they can't keep their doors open if there's no employees. Well, let's keep our employees from being sick. Let's stop, you know, how much things we have to touch and everything. Tap was such a great vehicle for that because there wasn't even people. I mean, you know, if you think about when you insert a card, you know, into a terminal sitting on a counter, they're not always the best bolted down or anything. You'll at least have to have one hand on the terminal, the other hand on the card, you know, kind of shoving it in. There was always something being touched. Tap wasn't. Tap, you just, you know, didn't even have to actually physically tap it. You just had to get close to it for the antenna to connect, and it worked, especially at fuel pumps. I love tap at fuel pumps for fraud reasons, for consumer reasons. It's fast. It also eliminates that awkward elevator moment, I like to call it, where, you know, if you have that awkward elevator moment and two people going up don't want to talk to each other, don't make eye contact, they're standing right next to me. It was the same thing for the EMV chip. You insert the chip, and rather than when it was a swipe or you would swipe and you had time to put it in your wallet, put that away before the transaction was processed, you couldn't do that. It was just dip into the terminal, and you and the clerk didn't want to make eye contact. Nobody looked at each other. It was awkward pause before it was done. Tap is fast and kind of brings back that less awkward moment. To get back to your question, sorry, I'm going off a little bit on a tangent of it, but are businesses finally keeping up? I'd say yes. I think that this all drove that. I think trying to keep their employees healthy drove it. I think celebrities advertising, you know, drove it. I think some of the bigger merchants caught on to the fact that once they start seeing heavy advertisements around, the payment networks as far as, you know, how quickly, you know, you can tap a payment and how cool that looks and how interesting it is. And maybe to a lesser extent, security. You know, most people just care more about convenience and how cool it looks and who's advertising it compared to the security of it. But those of you that that are in the industry see the benefits of it. I think all that combined started making the bigger businesses adopt the technology and to follow suit, because now the bigger businesses have it. People like it. Once they start using it, everybody likes tap. That drove smaller businesses to do it as well.
Yeah. If you take a look, you could also divide it up by the categories, by size. The restaurants had to go to order ahead for pickup. And so if they weren't only accepting cash, surprise, now you better move to a card. You better enable that order to be placed and arranged to be picked up. You have the large merchants that had to do the same thing, but they also have the dollars to invest in new payment types. And we're pretty, some of them move very quickly to contactless, maybe too quickly because faster EMV hadn't quite developed yet. And so the first EMVs took longer than the newest EMV. But it all worked itself out. Your point about acceptance is the trick. You know, I have Apple Pay. Where can I use it? That's the problem now as well for crypto. Great. Okay, I have it. But cards are every place. Crypto isn't. So, yeah, it's all about acceptance. And it's all about giving the consumer the frictionless kind of payment environment that helps them buy.
I think you made a great point, Tim. And let's say I was a business. Let's say I'm just a mom and pop diner and all I accepted was cash. Well, now in a society that wants to use less cash, well, if I'm going to buy into the technology, I'm not buying the old technology. I'm not buying just a swipe terminal or anything like that. I'm going to have to buy the newer touch, you know, terminals. Maybe it's the ones that, you know, sit right on the table with the customer, so that way they can just like tap and pay and leave, which I personally love that as well. I find it very convenient. It's much easier for my kids. I don't have to wait for someone to walk away with my credit card and come back, you know.
And the cost has come way down. Now it's built on Android or Apple. And so the cost for the most sophisticated solution is way less than it used to be.
Got it.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly very interesting and true. You know, with all those aspects there. And Tim, to your crypto point, I do want to get into some of that. But first, I want to take a look at, you know, kind of the generation aspect of it here, right? Because I mean, when you look at consumers, each generation typically kind of has their own set behaviors that we can certainly identify here. But I think one thing that's certainly been interesting is because of the pandemic, we might be kind of seeing some blurred lines behind kind of some of the generational differences in their behaviors. So Jay, I'd love to get from your perspective, what kind of generational trends are you certainly seeing in terms of consumer purchasing behaviors and how it is they like to pay?
To address two different generational trends that we've seen, that was kind of interesting. So I think the older generations all of a sudden had to adopt more electronic payments. I'll use my father as my best example. My father's 84 years old, loved writing checks, did not really want to do electronic payments. And I mean, if he can, he will drive to the place to make sure he drops off that check in person. One, just to get out around town. But that's just the way he's always done it. That's the way that he did it when he was a business owner. That was the way he did it afterwards, you know, to just make sure that payment got there on time and got a receipt for it, which he probably still has receipts from like the 1965, you know, from a utility bill that he dropped off. But he was forced, because everyone started closing their doors, as everyone was, to start doing electronic payments, to start setting up online bill payment. Now that it's set up, he's like, wow, it's like, this is easy. Like, why didn't you tell me about this? Like, I did many times a day, but you know, you finally did it. And again, it's secure. I'm not handing somebody something with my bank account number written on it to a complete stranger. And yes, just because you walked to the utility office and gave it to somebody does not mean that once you left, that person wasn't writing down your routing number and account number and or just taking a picture of it with their cell phone and then depositing it. Well, it's much more of a pain in the rear from a security standpoint to have to replace the whole checking account than it is if your debit or credit card is compromised, right? So I think it really helped with that, that the older generation was forced to get into more electronic payments, which thankfully are more secure and quicker. The other generational trends that I'm seeing in the fraud space, at least, is the younger generation moving to buy now, pay later type of payment methods. And you're starting to spring this up, see this spring up all over the place. You know, instead of making a transaction, you know, if I go onto this website and then just entering in my card information, I can use a buy now, pay later option at the majority of merchants. It becomes a big problem in my world, in the fraud world, trying to identify, you know, all these buy now, pay later transactions, where's the endpoint, you know, if there's fraud patterns that are involved with it. But the younger generation loves it because they can even use a debit card to, you know, take a $100 payment and spread that between $25 monthly payments for 4 months. Oh, I can buy something that I can't afford right now. This is phenomenal. What could go wrong with this? So we're seeing a very large shift in the buy now, pay later space on the younger generation, and then on an older generation, more of electronic payments. In the middle, like kind of your Gen Xers, kind of about the same. We're seeing that they were using electronic and technology before, we're seeing that after, and we're not seeing as big of an adoption in the buy now, pay later because they're at a part in their careers normally by now that they don't have to break something out into equal payments and maybe have finished paying off their student loans and their credit card debt. And like, I don't want any more to have to deal with. I just want to be able to manage my bank account.
So yes to all of that. I will say that sometimes the fact that the younger generation are using these electronic formats, such as P2P, it kind of drives the parents to adopt it as well. You know, your child needs money, and what you would normally do isn't going to work. What you have to do now is Venmo or use a P2P solution, Zelle, to be able to get them that money. And once you've done it, you see how easy it is. You're not probably thinking about fraud. You're thinking about convenience and how simple it is to be able to do it. I got it from a financial institution. It must be okay. Yet there's more fraud enabled by that P2P environment than most people should be comfortable with. So you have age groups that interact with each other, and you have necessity. And I guess all of that kind of drives people to one way or the other. And again, none of them ever go away. Well, they'll all be there.
So as we're kind of taking a look at like this continuously evolving landscape here, and, you know, kind of my use case example that I brought up and Tim was pointing out, you've got different generations interacting with other generations and kind of a, hey, it's a little bit of a necessity type of the things. I'm curious to kind of get from your perspective, where do you kind of see the future of the payments industry kind of going from this perspective in terms of consumer behaviors and trends and kind of the different generational aspects and then also the adoption of those different payments? As you pointed out earlier in your conversation, hey, there's not just the, hey, the consumer part of the equation, but there's also the acceptance part of the equation. Kind of putting all of that together, and I know it's a bit of a mouthful, where do you kind of see the payments industry going?
Well, right now I see it heading in a really – really good way. I see a lot of adoption, you know, as I mentioned before, about dual interface cards, so your contactless tap, you know, type of technology. I see a lot more financial institutions adopting that. I see a lot more merchants accepting it. I can only really think of one merchant in my area that I can't tap at. And honestly, I get annoyed every time I go there because I can't tap because I have to now insert and wait, and I feel like I'm using old technology, even though it's really not that old to us in the United States, but it now feels almost like old technology because everything, you know, gets upgraded and expires in every 10 minutes. On the online space, I see it melding a lot with the card present space, and the pandemic helped that. I see, I know, I think it started right away where you saw curbside pickup, you know, of things. So instead of, you know, where stores were closed, I couldn't walk into a store, present payment, and walk out with merchandise, but I could buy it on their website, drive up there, show my ID, and then walk away with it. So it was a card not present transaction, but a card present situation. I think we see that in the food and beverage industry now as well. You know, I can order, you know, a triple shot latte on my phone, even if I'm standing in the store that I'm receiving it at. And I like doing that because I don't have to wait in line and I can do it quickly and I accumulate, you know, points and rewards and everything else, you know, for that. Plus, I get to make sure that my drink is exactly the way it is without the person trying to interpret what I just said and punch it in wrong on the keypad type of thing. I think that's a very interesting meld because in the fraud world, our business has been divided between card present and card not present for a very long time. You do this for card present. You do have these rules for card not present. Well, now those worlds have merged. It's been very interesting in my atmosphere to watch those two atmospheres meld. On top of that, there's a type of authentication system in the online space called 3D Secure. And those that have been in the payments business for a long time have a very bad taste in their mouth when it comes to 3D Secure because of the way that it was when it first rolled out. You know, it was an old static password type of system where you know, you got a card as a consumer, and if your bank or credit union participated in it, you had to go home, register this card on a third-party site, choose a password that you were going to forget in 5 minutes, not to mention 6 months later when you were finally prompted for it on a website. But the trick to it was when you went to a website that participated in the service, it would prompt you for that password that you forgot 5 minutes after that you established it. And even worse, because how many people are actually going to go home and register for it, first of all? If you weren't registered, the screen would say, oh, you register now. Click this link to register now. So a fraudster would say, okay, and I'll choose my own password, and I'll complete the transaction. What a great system. It's evolved so much. It's actually a pretty phenomenal system, you know, now that we fast forward to 2022. All risk-based involved. We can see IP addresses of the people completing it. We can see device IDs. We can see right down to what type of terminal. Is it an iPhone? Is it an Android? Is it a PC? What browser are they using? We can drill down to so much information. And I'm a data nerd, so information is phenomenal. So we're seeing that strengthen a lot. As far as the security of all that, though, and where I see things going is that, okay, so we've secured card present transactions very well, right? So criminals cannot beat the chip yet, knock on wood. They can't beat TAP. They both work off dynamic encryptions, which are phenomenal. Okay, so we start securing more of the online space. So if there's any real shift in things, it's now having to secure the lowest common denominator, which is the human being. I think there needs to be more education around payments, around social engineering of people to get these worlds to mesh together very well. We see people all too willing on their social media profile, which is very likely not locked down, to answer surveys that give out all of their security information that any bank, credit union, or anyone else is ever going to ask them. You know, if you just do a quick search on a search engine, say common security questions, you'll get a list of everything that people are looking for. What's your mother's maiden name? What was your first make and model of your car? You know, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite sport? I could go onto just about anybody's social media profile and get all of that information because chances are they got bored one day and answered one of those surveys that say, hey, copy and paste this, that are asking those exact questions. Or they're just putting it out there for everybody to know because people can't stop themselves from giving as much personal information because they feel that's their own private corner of the world. So, you know, to answer your question, you know, where do I see things going? I think there's got to be more education and time spent on educating people as far as what information they should and most importantly should not be giving out and putting on a public space like an internet. Otherwise, we're going to start seeing a lot more fraud, account takeover type of fraud, SIM swapping type of fraud, you know, things where fraudsters who are very bold these days just pretending to be people and able to hijack their bank account, hijack their credit card, because they're convincing everybody that I am the cardholder.
Excellent. Well, I think there's certainly a lot of things to consider there. And, you know, Jay would certainly love to continue this conversation, but I think we'll wrap things up on that note there. So, Jay, Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to speaking with me, and I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jay.